It's that first one of the season. So, yeah, we got to slow down again and drive carefully. We currently have 33 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios of WISR, 680 AM, Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. News time, just about 12:30. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. You can always get news, of course, on our website, butlerradio.com, and on Alexa Power devices. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. And all of a sudden, it's December 11th. We've got this week, we've got next week, and then it's Christmas. Wow. And before that, we have the first day of winter, which is next week. It's Thursday, I believe. Yeah, Thursday of next week, 21st. First day of winter. Also the shortest day of the year, which means that our days will start getting longer after next Thursday. And that's a relief for most folks as we look forward to the warming of the seasons. Now there's a delay, just as it takes a while for us to cool off here in the northern hemisphere. And, you know, really, last week, we were still having some pretty warm weather the first day or two of last week. And then it turned cold and biting. And we've certainly had that over the weekend. My gosh, that wind again over the weekend was unreal, wasn't it? Temperatures both Saturday and Sunday never got out of the 20s, and it was very windy. Now, not as much wind today, thank goodness, although another blast of Arctic air is expected, and it'll be reinforcing coming in late tonight and tomorrow. It's going to get even colder than it has been. Well, it's the way it is this time of year. Actually, we've been lucky. You know, it doesn't happen every year, but you can get bitterly cold weather. You can get ice and snow and everything else by Thanksgiving. And certainly a week and a half into December, you can have it, huh? Yeah. We'll see if it holds. There's a moderating trend scheduled perhaps for the weekend. We'll see. Not like the olden days whenever we were sled riding already, huh? Yeah. Open talk on the first portion of the program today. Our phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. We have guests later. We're going to be talking with an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Joshua Szabo from Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. We've talked with Dr. Szabo in the past, but boy, it's been a while. It's been a while. So we'll be talking about stuff like rotator cuff injury and, I don't know, can you replace a shoulder? You get knee replacement, hip replacement. I don't know. You can do a shoulder or not. Now, he does other stuff, but I think his specialty is shoulder surgery. So we'll talk with Dr. Szabo a little bit later on the program today. Also today, as we continue our search, and we've been doing this for, I guess, a couple of weeks now, get a chance to talk about a last-minute stocking stuffer idea. And this would be a reissue of a children's book. And I got to be honest with you, folks. Maybe it's me. I don't know. The Boy Who Lived in Pudding Lane. Now, I got word from the publisher. This has been reissued by Pamela McCall. And I don't ever recall reading it when I was a kid. Maybe it already disappeared by then. Maybe that's why they're bringing it back. I don't know. But anyway, we'll talk to her for a few minutes later on the program today. And then also flu shots. That'll be coming up on the final segment of the program today. Is it too late? You first started hearing about flu shots when? September, certainly October. Is it too late to get a flu shot? And in particular, we're talking about why it's important for seniors to get a flu shot if you're 65 or older. And we'll talk with a physician and a nurse practitioner about that on the final segment of the program today. Dr. Adam Welch and nurse practitioner Gina Venditti. So we get information on flu shots, especially for seniors. Some people don't get a flu shot. Some people think you can get the flu from getting a flu shot. I don't think that's true. We'll ask the good doctor, though, when we chat with him later on the program today. So that's the lineup of activities on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Open talk to begin with. 283-2525. 283-2525. There was in fact, it was the cover story in the Parade magazine. You read that Parade magazine? Comes in the Sunday paper. The Post-Gazette. I don't know whether it comes in other papers or not. But their cover story yesterday was on Christmas cookies. Christmas cookies. And I looked at the picture and I said, I don't seem to recognize too many of those. So then I checked the story, and I got to be honest with you, one that I know of, Red Velvet Crackle Cookies, and I recognize them because they're kind of cracked at the top. I don't know how you do that. I'm not a baker. But I can remember those from... And what kind of Christmas cookies do we remember? What kind our family used to bake? You know, either your mom or... I was lucky. I had a couple of aunts who were good bakers. And when I was going to school, I would always head back after the Christmas break with two or three tins of cookies, of homemade cookies. And boy, was it ever a challenge to make those last till the end of January. Maybe even Valentine's Day. I never saw it. I don't know whether they were trying to bring in something new or whether these are common cookies for people. I can remember that my mom, first of all, used to make a lemon cookie. I don't know whether it was lemon drop or I don't bake. But they were delicious. And they had little... very little chunks of lemon peel in them, whatever you call that. You know, when you use that little thingamajig and it just... Zest of lemon, I guess that's what it's called, right? And then it had lemon frosting. And, oh, man, were those things good. Mm. And she also made a chocolate cookie. It was kind of a chocolate drop. It was nothing complicated. But they were absolutely addicting. Absolutely addicting. And there's one other one that I remember, and I've seen this on other people's cookie plates at Christmas time. It's kind of a nut mix, and then in the middle there was a dollop of frosting. My mom called them snickerdoodles, but I don't know whether that was her name or her mother's name for them or whatever. It was obviously a recipe passed down. But it was a nut, a cookie dough with nuts mixed in it. And then you would, thumbprint was the other name that you would call them. Apparently that's how you made the indentation in the center, where then later you would, squeeze the frosting. What do they call that thing? A bag? Frosting bag. I'm sure there's a name for it. Squeeze the frosting in there. My mom always used to make it either red or green, with food coloring. Oh, they were good, too. Thumbprints. Yeah. Thumbprints. Anybody remember those? Anybody else have those in their family? Running in their family? No, there were other kinds, as I say. I was fortunate. I had a couple of aunts who were exquisite bakers, and they always kept me well supplied. And then it was kind of a tradition back in those days that, you went visiting sometimes, and if you went visiting during the Christmas season, what's the first thing people did whenever you visited their home? They got out the candy dish and the cookie tin, right? And they passed it around. Yeah. Oh, I remember those cookies very well. Mm. Good eating. So anyway, I got on this cover of the Parade magazine. I got this, I don't know. They didn't look very appealing to me, except for these red velvet crackle things. They looked pretty good. I guess you like what you like, huh? You like what you're familiar with. You know? Same thing with the strawberry shortcake. My mom made it from some recipe from Bisquick. It was more of a biscuit as opposed to, you know, the spongy kind of stuff that you see in a store. It looks like a Twinkie without the middle in it, you know. I gag on those things. I couldn't anymore put strawberries on those. Fly to the moon. But, you know, you like what you grew up with. Right? You like what was familiar. I love those lemon zest Christmas cookies and those chocolate drop and those thumbprint. I could eat a million of them. And fortunately, back in those days, I could eat a million of them. This was before my metabolism went to the moon. 283-2525 is our number. Do you have a favorite kind of Christmas cookie that you remember as a child or from childhood? Or maybe, you know, you still bake Christmas cookies. A lot of people bake. A lot of people, there's a couple of people on our staff here at the radio station who still, that's a tradition, baking Christmas cookies, baking a bunch of them, and then give a bunch of them away, huh? Yeah. And there are a lot of churches that have Christmas cookie sales this time of year, right? There are a lot of ethnic traditions with certain cookies. If your family roots are from Italy or from Germany or from some other country, you have ethnic cookies that you enjoy at Christmas time. 283-2525 is the number. I'll tell you what, my mouth is watering like one of Pavlov's dogs right now, yearning for one of those lemon zest cookies. Wow. 283-2525, let's go to the telephones here today. It's open talk, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hello? Hello? Now, let me see here. Let me crank this up a little bit. There we go. Hello, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi there. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good, good. Cookies. I'll be making them all next week.
Oh, you're a baker too, huh?
Yeah, yes. I love making cookies. I have a lot of recipes that you talked about. And my mother never made lemon cookies. Maybe my dad didn't like them. anything with lemon in it. But I wanted to talk about two things. The cookies was the one thing. And you said you were having a guest on today about the flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a report out last week that it's like 10% effective. Why don't you bother getting it? I wondered if you might be able to ask them about that.
Well, if you're a senior, it's a different ball game than if you're younger and, you know, healthier. From the information that I have, the flu, it can be deadly for seniors.
Right.
Most of the people who die from the flu are seniors.
But it's only 10% effective. That's what I was asking about. So is it too late to come up with something else?
Oh, yes. They formulate those long in advance. You know. I have not heard that report. I'm not doubting you. I have not heard it. Maybe I can check it out.
Yeah. Well, it was on the news last week.
Do you get a flu shot?
Yes, I did. I got it in October, and I got sick right after that. I've had it since. Well, I've been sick. I'll put it that way.
Well, I'll ask him about
in November.
I'll ask him about that too. Hey, thanks for the call. Good to talk with you today. Thanks. 283-2525 is our number. Hi, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave.
Yes. Hi.
I remember they used to make fruit nut bread, too.
I know that. There was nobody in my family that made it.
My mom used to make it.
She used to make it? And that's
my
stuff,
mother.
And you liked it? It was good?
Oh, yeah, I liked it.
It was always a heavy...
Not in the store, but they ain't as good as... old people used to make back in.
That may be my problem. I have tasted it, but it's usually not homemade. So that can make a big difference.
My mom used to make homemade ones around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fruitcake. That's a staple around Christmas time.
Yeah. It's better to get or something like that.
The memories, huh? Boy, don't you wish you had a big slice of that right now, huh?
Oh, yeah. I remember she used to make a lot of homemade candy, too.
Yeah, there were some households that did that. Now we didn't have a lot of homemade candy. We usually had, sometimes store-bought candy. Sometimes people would give candy as a gift. But
I think she used to make her own snowballs, out of popcorn.
Popcorn balls.
Yeah.
I was never too big on those. They stick to your teeth too much.
Yeah, well, then you'd take in some way, take the popcorn and put it on a string and, something sweet.
Yeah, use it for a decoration, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, right. Dave, I just wondered to me if you ever remembered that.
Never had it in my family, but I've heard of it.
My mom used to make it.
Thanks, my friend. Good to talk to you. Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so long. Never had that in my family. I had another aunt. Aunt Mary was a great candy maker. Isn't it funny how you had certain people in the family who are really, really good at some things? I had one aunt who was a fabulous pie maker. Man. Terrific. Well, I had another aunt who was a candy maker, and she made something called, and again, do families have their own pet names for these candies? She made something that she called Divinity. Divinity. Ever hear of that, Pat Parker? In the booth there, you've heard of it? It was a white, very, very sweet. I mean, really, really... really, one piece about all you got to handle. But it was a heavy candy, and I suppose because it had so much sugar. But it looked like a marshmallow color. It was pure white. Some nuts in it. But she called it Divinity. I have no idea how you make it. I wouldn't have the slightest idea how to start making candy. But that was her specialty. She was good. She'd crank that out. But again, it was so rich that, you couldn't handle more than like one piece at a time. Unless, of course, you were 5 or 6 years old, in which case you could eat a whole plate of it. Wouldn't even faze you. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Christmas candy, Christmas cookies. Nice cup of hot chocolate. Yeah. Or a cup of coffee. Yeah. A couple of Christmas cookies. I'm ready to go. Have you done your decorating yet? I have a feeling this past weekend, a lot of people kind of wrap that up, except for the people who decorate late. We talked about this, I guess it was last week. And since then, I've run into many, many people who had that tradition of decorating very late whenever they were kids, I could remember that. And there are many people who still hold to that tradition today. They just don't put up their decorations until right before Christmas. In some cases, even Christmas Eve. Now, I don't know, was that back in a less stressful time, less strenuous? I mean, I can't imagine if you had a family, even with, a couple of kids, doing all that on Christmas Eve. I mean, you'd go out of your gourd and go nuts. Put up the tree and all that other stuff, other decorations. Yeah. I'm a person who likes to put up the Christmas decorations, the holiday decorations early. I enjoy the lights. I enjoy the festive atmosphere that it creates. And, to each his own, I guess. I don't know. I don't see anything wrong with putting them up early. Celebrate the season. Leave them up for a week or so after Christmas. No problem with that. By the way, both Christmas and New Year's fall on Monday this year, correct? Yeah. So will there be extra governmental holidays? I don't think so. Why would there be? A lot of folks will take half a day on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve, but they're both going to be Sundays this year. Christmas Eve is a Sunday, New Year's Eve is a Sunday. So will people be flying out of work early on the Friday beforehand? I don't know. I mean, obviously it's happened before, but I can't remember the last time we had Christmas and New Year's on Monday. It'd be interesting. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk on the It's Your Turn program today. 283-2525. Wanted to tell you about one of our sponsors on the program today, and that's our good friends at DBS Telecom. They are a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving the entire Butler region, Pittsburgh area too, by the way. What do? They sell, they install, and they repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. DBS Telecom has been around for a while. They've been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years now. Mm-hmm. We know them well because we've utilized their services, oh gosh, many, many years here at WISR. They specialize in phone systems, in custom-designed networks, including fiber optics. They specialize in a high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems. How about yours? Are you ready for a new system? Yeah. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems. Boy, everybody needs that these days. Overhead commercial paging, multi-door entry access systems. They also do cabling. They provide cabling for voice data and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. As I say, we've used their services for years here at WISR on the Butler Radio Network. Call them today. More information on their services, 285-9088. 285-9088. Or check them out online at dbs-tel.com. Okay, back to the people we go. It's Open Talk on this segment of It's Your Turn. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. You were talking about divinity candy.
Yes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
When I still make it today, but it's mostly sugar and corn syrup and egg whites.
So that's what makes it white,
so that's why you could only eat one piece of it. And it's, they just, you know, you just drop it. Just drop a little gob and keep going.
Now, so, when you say drop a gob, you know, you, obviously yeah. my culinary skills are lower than rudimentary. Where do you drop the gob?
Well, you do it onto a buttered plate or pan or something. Okay. It doesn't get cooked or anything.
Oh, it doesn't.
It gets cooked. It does get cooked a little bit, but it's you just drop it onto some wax paper or a buttered plate or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you use a buttered spoon and just drop a spoonful,
and then
close a tablespoon.
And it kind of hardens up on that sheet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the outside hardens up, and the inside is soft until, you know, after a few days it gets dry.
Mm-hmm. So you say it's mostly sugar
and Karo
syrup.
And white egg whites. You put a little bit of water in it.
I see. Now, I think
people put nuts.
I was going to say, I can remember my Aunt Mary always had nuts in hers. I mean,
it
was very good, but it was very rich, you know.
It's so rich. And you can only eat one piece of it at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my mother always made sugar cookies and ginger cookies. That was molasses cookies. That was the ones that she made the most.
Mm-hmm.
And the raisin-filled cookies.
I've had those, and we used to have, my mom used to make sugar cookies, too. They were, that's pretty easy, right? I mean, you could teach anybody to make sugar cookies.
Yes. Well, you know, she would roll them out and cut shapes and so on.
Oh, yeah, you had those little stampers, those molds or whatever you call them, huh?
Yeah, the molasses cookies, and I still make them sometimes, too. I like them. I just cut round ones. I don't cut, but I've changed, of course, I'm not young anymore. I have kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, but, I make them for somebody else. I don't eat a whole lot of them, but I make a bunch of different kinds. And the ones that you were talking about that you put a little thumbprint, that's what they're called.
Thumbprint?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you're
then
familiar
you put
with
a little
those,
jelly
too.
Or something like that in the center. Yeah.
Well, my mom used to put a sweet frosting and icing in there.
Or you can put frosting.
Yeah.
But, I like to put a little jam or jelly or something sometimes.
Is there anything that signifies Christmas, that brings back memories, than the smell of baking cookies in the kitchen, the aromas that come out of the oven?
Oh, wow. Yes. And if you walk outside and come back in a few minutes, it smells even better.
Oh, Toll House. There's another one. Those really smell good whenever they're baking in the oven.
They do,
yeah.
Yes.
Toll House.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, boy, I think I've put on about 2.5 pounds just talking to you here.
Well, and I make chocolates. I go up to Mary's candy store.
Oh, yeah.
And get 10 or 15 pounds of chocolate. And then I make all kinds. I make some caramel and some fondant and coat, like peanut butter peanut butter ones plus just peanut clusters and toasted coconut clusters and that kind of thing.
Now, how do you buy, I was a kid, I wasn't paying that much attention. Do you buy chocolate like in big chunks that you melt down? Seems to me I can remember my mom having a powdered dark chocolate, very strong powder. It came in a can.
I've never used anything like that. Years ago, we used to get them in 10-pound, it would be a 10-pound block, a long block, not more than 2 inches thick. I don't think even that. And it would be pretty good size. But now at Mary's, we get, they're just like little chocolate drops. And in pound containers and 10-pound containers and so on.
Much more convenient to use that way, right?
It is. Yeah. It is, yeah. Yes.
Oh, I know what that stuff was. It was called coca. It was a tin of
coca.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So
right. We make the...
That would have been used just to flavor something, not to make a whole batch of cookies, would it?
Well, you know, the no bake cookies. You use, the coca in that, and so on, and you don't have to bake them. You just cook your syrup, until it gets to the right temperature, and then start dropping it. You put different things in it, you can put rolled oats or coconut and things like that, nuts, and just drop them. But you have to get it just right. Because if you don't, then if you overcook it, then it's too dry. And if you undercook it, it doesn't dry to be, to be nice.
This
sticky.
Is obviously why I don't know much about it. Now, were there relatives in your family, your mom or someone, who passed on this knowledge that you have? Is that how you picked it up?
Some of it. She never made, she made very little candy. But, well, years ago, Mary Ball had, when she was up toward Grease City up in there, she had a little shop that she kind of gave some lessons.
Oh.
And so I'd go on to a couple of those, and then you just use your imagination and make things. So.
Well, that's where you and I part ways, because if I used my imagination, it would probably come out looking like a hamburger.
Well, somebody would get a lot of chocolate.
Thanks for calling. Nice to talk with you today.
Good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
You have a good Christmas.
And you too, yes.
Thank you.
One more call, and then we go to the good doctor. Hi, caller. You've got the last word. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Oh, boy, do I have traditions on cookies.
Do you?
Mom only made drop cookies, maybe because she had a big family, and it was faster. And she made chocolate drops, Jubilee Jumbles, and she had a recipe for sugar cookies that was like a drop cookie, very soft and cakey. And Jubilee Jumbles and Snickerdoodles. Snickerdoodles with cinnamon and sugar.
Yeah,
you take a sugar cookie and roll it in cinnamon and sugar and then bake it.
Oh,
and
my.
Oh,
baby, I remember those two. I forgot all about those. Now all I need is a big glass of chocolate milk, and I'm ready to go.
And my husband's family, their tradition was date fingers, which is like a fruitcake, but the only fruit that was in it was dates and nuts.
Yeah.
And they were. It sounds yucky, but it was very, very good.
Never had any of that.
And powdered sugar was the only icing that's put on it. Mm-hmm. Now, my sister-in-law, her tradition was the day before Christmas, they sat down and baked sugar cookies and shapes and stuff, and she brought them out of the oven and put them on the table, and she had seven children, and those children baked cookies for Christmas. And they knew which ones were theirs. This is mine.
Oh, my.
Put my name on it and things like that. But, you know, it was really something to see all those cookies coming out of the oven. She'd bake them, and as fast as she could bake them, they decorated them.
Oh, my. Good memories. And, hey, gosh, nice to talk with you today. I really appreciate you calling in. Nice to share the memories.
I have one more. My sister, she makes the best Christmas cookies in the world, Lady Locks.
I've heard of them. I've never had them.
Oh, man. They're like a phyllo dough with like a cream inside. They call them something else at the bakery. Yeah. Anyway, I'll let you go. No. You go talk to the doctor.
Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you.
Okay, have a good Christmas.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. A quick break, and then we're going to be talking with the orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Joshua Szabo. It's next on It's Your Turn on WISI. We'll be right back. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Monday night, the Penguins' season-long five-game homestand wraps up with the Colorado Avalanche coming to town. Coverage on the Penguins Radio Network begins at 6:30 p.m. on Penguins Live pregame as the guys dial up all the action on tap that night at PPG Paints Arena. Then at 7 o'clock, it's the call of the Pens and the Avs from downtown Pittsburgh. Don't miss the action on the Penguins Radio Network.
Pittsburgh Penguins Hockey brought to you in part by Tribe Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, Hunter Truck Sales, Thrower Concrete, Monday Shoes, Camisa's Auto Body, Butler Agway, A&D Heating and Cooling, and Cash Dollar and Associates.
Are you searching for the perfect holiday gift for someone you care about? Well, look no further. Personalized photo calendars from Sir Speedy Printing are great gifts that last the whole year. Everyone will love the personal touch that you were able to put into your gift and appreciate the memories that come back with every picture you chose. Be the hero of holiday gifts with the help of Sir Speedy Printing on South Main Street in Butler. Stop in or give us a call today.
Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. Ever have a tough time getting the motor started early in the morning? I know what you mean. Well, maybe I can help. I'd like to invite you to join me every weekday morning, Monday through Friday, for the Early Morning Show here on WISR. We start with the first local news of the day, bright and early at 5:30. We go to 9:30, and oh yes, we pause for half an hour and have coffee with Kate at 8:30 every weekday morning, too. Please join me. I'd like to share the early morning hours, 5:30 weekdays here on WISR.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom, but a little over a year ago, we realized she couldn't take care of herself without our help. And, well, how could I not be there for her? I had no idea how hard it would be, and just what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and, even for me, ways to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics that got me started, but also information about the hurdles I was facing in this new role. I could even connect with experts and hear from others who had been in my place. I know this road we're on isn't an easy one, but I'm really happy to have the extra help for her and for me. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. This message is brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Do you like to talk as much as I do? Good. Join me for Let's Talk weekday mornings at 11:15 on WISR. I'm Tracy Morgan. We talk medical issues, natural health options, batteries, jobs, food. We take a look at the housing market in and around Butler County. Listen on the radio live, on the free app, or even as a podcast. All with the fabulous experts in and around Butler. I ask the questions, they get to answer, you get the benefit. Let's Talk weekday mornings on WISR 680 AM.
Blue the dog here for propane. Making the rounds with my owner, the propane man, has allowed me to see a lot. I may just be a simple dog. I didn't attend the elite boarding kennels, but I do know that propane fuels the independence of millions of Americans with clean, reliable energy and powers modern appliances from tankless water heaters to high-efficiency furnaces.
Brought to you by the Pennsylvania Propane Gas Association and your local propane service providers.
Over the past decade, the WISR staff has delivered thousands of poinsettias to area nursing homes as part of their annual Project Poinsettia effort. The residents are grateful, and our team now often includes Mrs. Claus and youngsters who sing and dance to create joy in the hearts of those who may not have any visitors during the holiday season. It is with sincere gratitude that we recognize our community stewards who graciously underwrite the poinsettias. Project Poinsettia is sponsored in part by Bill's Interior Grooming, the C.W. Howard Insurance Agency, and the law firm of Conlin and Tarker.
Good friends, and boy, nice to talk. First time in quite a while with Dr. Joshua Szabo from Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. In fact, the good doctor and I were just trying to remember how long it's been since we have talked, and I'm not sure, Dr. Szabo, but for goodness sakes, as you said, you're surprised people aren't clamoring to have you back on again.
Yes, that's true. You know, time flies, so I have a hard time keeping track of when I was last on, but I remember I enjoyed being on the show, and I appreciate you having me on today. Thank you very much.
Dr. Szabo, listeners, is an orthopedic sports medicine physician and a shoulder surgeon with the Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. Is your primary work with shoulders, Dr. Szabo, or do you cover other joint and muscle areas as well?
Well, sports medicine is somewhat of a misnomer because I do take care of elite athletes, but I take care of soft tissue injuries, and that's really what sports medicine denotes. And I do operate on shoulders, but more importantly, I work on elbows and knees in addition to that for my daily practice. So I do a little bit more than just shoulders.
How long have you been with Tri-Rivers, Doctor?
I think this is my 12th year, so. But time is flying. It feels like I just joined yesterday.
A lot of the physicians on staff at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers have been there for quite a while.
Well, it's a great place to work. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a testament to how we get along as a group and how much we enjoy what we do. I think we all share the same love and passion for being able to help and care for people. I have the coolest job in the world as far as I'm concerned, and I get to take care of Olympic athletes, but I still wouldn't trade my job for anything.
When I hear shoulder injury, the first thing that I think of, and it's probably because I guess I watch football, is rotator cuff. It's also a problem with baseball players, too. Is that one of the more common injuries that you see, some sort of rotator cuff problem?
By and large, the main complaint I see for shoulder problems would be that of the rotator cuff. But my football players usually have ligament injuries. And in the shoulder, we refer to those as labral tears. So we have people that dislocate their shoulder. They get tackled awkwardly or what have you. And they may need to go to the hospital and get their shoulder reduced back into position or pop back in. So the younger athletes I see more labral tears, but in the older population, I see more rotator cuff. And then in the throwing athletes, the mature throwing athlete, the Major League Baseball player who's mature in his career, you can see rotator cuff problems in them as well.
What about the average person? Because most of us are not baseball players or football players. Can the average person get a rotator cuff injury fairly easily?
Unfortunately, yes. And we're heading into the great season for rotator cuff tears. With the snow and ice upon us, and people slip and fall, the most common reason they come into my office is because they fall and land on their elbow, and then their elbow drives up into their shoulder and results in a shoulder injury.
Hmm.
And that can cause a combination of injuries. It can cause broken bones. It can cause dislocations and labral tears, or like we're discussing now, rotator cuff tears, which are, this is the season upon us.
So what kind of a joint is the shoulder? I'm looking at the knee, and it pretty much goes, you know, back and forth. The hip is more of a ball and socket thing with quite a bit more maneuverability. But the shoulder probably has more movability than any other joint, doesn't it?
It's got the most degrees of freedom of motion of any joint in the body. And the best way to look at it is if you're thinking about the bony anatomy of the shoulder, is like a golf ball and a golf tee. And if you've ever teed up a golf ball, you realize that that golf ball falls off quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
So inherently, the shoulder is somewhat unstable, so it requires its ligaments and its rotator cuff tendons to be functional, for the shoulder to be functional, because it does, because of the movements, how we can kind of windmill our arms about. There's no other joint that can do that. So it's a complex joint.
Rotator cuff muscle tear sounds pretty serious. Does that always require surgery, Dr. Zabel?
Not always. And there are times where we can just observe people. We can help them along with physical therapy, maybe an injection of cortisone or something of that nature. And the thing you have to know about rotator cuff tears is it varies by how old you are.
Oh.
So, for instance, if you're under 40 years of age and you have a rotator cuff tear, that's a pretty significant injury. That's an abnormal occurrence. And invariably, most, if not all, would end up getting surgery for that problem. However, when we go around the sun 60 times or over the age of 60 years, rotator cuff tears can occur spontaneously. Much like our belt loops get bigger, or rather the dry cleaners keep shrinking my clothes, and my hair turns gray as I age, you can also see tears of the rotator cuff. And it doesn't necessarily mean we have to fix all of them, because people can still live active and relatively full lives if there's certain tear patterns there. So not every torn rotator cuff needs or deserves surgery, and you have to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Are there multiple muscles in the rotator cuff?
There are. There are four tendons that comprise the rotator cuff. It's a sleeve of different muscles that help the humeral head, which is the ball portion, stay centered in the socket or glenoid so that we can lift our arms over our head. And we use our rotator cuff really anytime we engage in activities that are above waist level, and absolutely over shoulder head, over shoulder height is when we really have to have our rotator cuffs functioning maximally.
So it's the upper end of the upper arm bone, that's the ball that goes into the joint?
Yes.
Okay. How do you know that you have a rotator problem? Is it simply pain? Are you unable to lift your arm? All of the above? What is it?
All of the above. Everyone kind of presents a little bit differently. One of the main reasons people seek care is because they can't sleep at night. Because rotator cuff tends to hurt, whether it's just an inflamed rotator cuff or a torn rotator cuff, it deprives people of their sleep. And it's interesting because people come in complaining of pain, but in reality, once I ask them whether or not they can sleep at night, they tend to go off on a tangent, and that's with most conviction what they report to me about how it's disruptive to their sleep and affects their life. But yes, it's both pain and weakness of overhead activity.
We're talking, for listeners who may have joined us a few minutes late, Dr. Joshua Zabel is with us. He is practicing in orthopedic sports medicine and shoulder surgery with the Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. Are you at multiple clinical sites, Dr. Zabel, while we're talking about your background here?
I am. I'm actually right now calling from the Butler Clearview office. which is off of Route 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go down to the Cranberry in two specific offices. One's in Mars, and then one's at the UPMC, Mario Lemieux Sports Medicine Center.
Are you originally from this area? I know you went to medical school in Philly.
I was Pittsburgh born and raised, but I actually grew up in the South Hills.
Oh, okay. Dr. Szabo visiting with us here today. Can you, we were talking about this earlier on the program today because I was telling people that you were going to be with us. And I said, I don't know whether you can replace a shoulder. Everybody knows about knee replacement. Now they've got partial knee replacement. Everybody knows about hip replacement. I don't know. Is there such a thing as a shoulder replacement?
Yes, there's several different variations of shoulder replacement surgery. You can do a partial shoulder replacement. You can do a full shoulder replacement. And then there's even yet another procedure called a reverse shoulder replacement, where you actually make the ball a socket and the socket a ball. And it all varies as to what the diagnosis you're treating for or how extensive the arthritis in the shoulder is. It will help cater to what specific procedure the patient may require.
You've mentioned the magic word there, arthritis. So you can get that in your shoulder too, eh?
You can, but it's less common than the hip and the knee. And the nice thing about shoulder arthritis is I have a fair amount of people in my practice with arthritic shoulders if you would review their radiographs. However, they don't need shoulder replacements. And the reason being is you don't walk on your shoulder. And some people have no pain and function quite well in spite of a radiograph or an x-ray that would demonstrate shoulder arthritis. Whereas if a hip or a knee are arthritic, most of the time you need those replaced because we stand and we walk constantly throughout the day. And it's a less tolerance of having arthritis in those joints compared to a shoulder.
Now, I've talked with some other physicians at your practice, Dr. Szabo, and they've indicated that obviously arthritis can be a residual result of an injury earlier in life, an old football injury or whatever. But they say that in the knee and in the hip, it's simply a matter of aging. I mean, the longer you live, the better chance you have of eventually getting bone on bone, I guess, huh?
I would tell you some people are predisposed most certainly to arthritis, and I see people who I do shoulder replacements, and that prior to them seeing me for that, they've already had both knees replaced, maybe a hip replacement or what have you. And so there's some people that no matter what they do, regardless, they're gonna be predisposed to arthritic wear and tear of their joints. And then there's another subset of population where you may have had a remote injury, and because of that, over a period of time, the joint will then deteriorate and ultimately to become symptomatic and require surgical intervention. But prior to that, there's a lot of stuff we can do to provide benefit and relief to patients.
Are there any inside the shoulder joint, are there any, you're going to chuckle at my terminology here because obviously I don't know the correct stuff. Are there any like pads, you know, bumper pads like the meniscus in the knee or something analogous to that?
There really aren't. I mean, if you look at it conceptually, there is a labrum, which is similar to a meniscus, but it's really where the ligaments insert and not necessarily a shock-absorbing pad. So there's no analogous pads.
Is a shoulder replacement a particularly delicate operation, or can most people handle that pretty easily?
It's been my experience that people with arthritic shoulders do wonderfully. But it's a big surgery. I mean, it involves several days in the hospital. It involves wearing a sling and recovering for a period of time. But people are quite satisfied after their surgical procedure when they recover.
And obviously this would vary from patient to patient, but how long could you expect reasonable recovery to take? How long till you could start swinging a golf club again or something?
Usually golf clubs, I vary my return to sport depending on what their level prior to surgery is. So, for instance, my single-digit handicap golfers get back quicker than the people that golf like me, which are duffers, really like high-handicapped people that aren't very good at golf. But anywhere between 3 to 6 months, depends how they progress, to swinging a golf club. And you start with the putting and the pitching and the shorter clubs, and you work your way up to the driver.
I wanted to talk a little bit about stability or instability in the shoulder. Now, is this related to what you were talking about several minutes ago when you mentioned that someone can suffer a dislocated shoulder? Is that what you're referring to?
It is. So that's when the ball and the socket are not reduced, and the ball goes around the socket and pops out of place. And it's a, understand what a dislocation is. That's when the shoulder comes out of joint. But the separation's a completely different injury. That's involving the top portion of the shoulder, when the collarbone or clavicle comes into the acromion. And that's often when people fall on their shoulders. So those are the terms that are also confusing when you hear in the press about some of the football injuries,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a dislocation or separation. Those are actually two separate terms, two separate injuries, and the anatomy is quite different. But they sound similar.
Yeah, and I've always thought they were the same. Shoulder separation, dislocated shoulder. By the way, dislocated shoulder, gosh, it sounds kind of gruesome.
It is most certainly gruesome, unfortunately. I mean, literally, it involves, you know, oftentimes people need some intravenous medication to get that back to reduce onto itself. And then afterwards, we'll have to figure out how much was injured at that time, because there can be a variety of injuries that occur, because you can have a rotator cuff tear or just a ligament tear. And oftentimes, that's related to how old somebody is at the time of injury. So my 16-year-old football players, they'd injure their ligaments. But once you get over 30 and 40 years of age, you can still dislocate your shoulder. But in general, it's not more of a ligament injury, but it's more of a rotator cuff injury,
mm-hmm.
where possibly you're going to break some bones when you do it at the same time.
Hmm. How do you repair? Do you suture a rotator cuff? Is that how you repair it?
Yes. We do it through the arthroscope now, which is the camera with a great light source. It's got wonderful optics. We're in high-definition technology,
mm-hmm.
So you see it wonderfully. And what you basically do is you bring the tendon edge back to bone where it was torn from. So you just put it back to where it was, and then you protect the person while they heal. Because the rotator cuff, you can repair it, but they can't use it right away. So I tell people it's a get-good fix, but it's not a get-quick fix. So there's a recovery process, usually in the magnitude of 3 to 4 months until people get back to a relatively normal life.
When we mention sports, we've mentioned football, baseball, golf. There are winter sports, too, which to me always seem more dangerous. You know, like coming down a hill on a pair of skis going 50 miles an hour or something like that. And we hear about some pretty gruesome injuries in winter sports. Lindsey Vonn is a U.S. Olympic skier. And my goodness, I don't know whether I could count the number of surgical procedures she had on her knees, and she still seems to come back every time.
Yes, she's an amazing athlete. She's an amazing person, and I'm wishing her the best in Pyeongchang.
Have you worked with professional skiers or Olympic skiers, Doctor?
I'm one of the U.S. ski team physicians. I actually don't work with Lindsey Vonn or the alpine athletes. I work with the freestyle athletes who this weekend were competing in Ruka, Finland for their first World Cup event of the year and their first qualifying event for the Olympic team. So I was getting updates on my cell phone on how things were progressing, and they're actually just landed in China where their second World Cup event's going to happen in about 10 days. So there's several of these events that will occur, and based on their standings, it will determine who goes to Pyeongchang, Korea, which is where the next Olympics will be held this coming February.
Mm-hmm. And snowboarding, are you familiar with that sport as well? Do you work
Yes.
with those athletes?
I don't work with those athletes. My athletes are the mogul skiers and the aerialists. And the snowboarders and the free skiers and the ski across team, the alpine athletes and the Nordic team all have different physicians that will care for them. And each has a group of physicians that will provide care for them throughout the season.
Wow. Well, we'll be seeing a lot of that before too much longer on the TV. Now, yesterday we had another big-name football player, the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, Wentz. What's his first name?
Carson.
Yeah, Carson. Yeah, thank you. The last report I heard, they think it's an ACL, anterior cruciate ligament in his knee, which would end his season. And I haven't heard an update on that since early this morning, so I'm not sure there is one.
There is. They confirmed his anterior cruciate ligament's been torn, and he'll be out for the season.
Wow. Now, when he was in, I wasn't watching this game yesterday, but I understand when he was hurt, he stayed in for another series and actually threw a touchdown pass. I obviously are able to stand and at least perform when you do this. It doesn't sound like a very smart thing to do, though.
Well, it's an interesting concept, and most would think that once you injure something, you can't return back to play or any sports. But unfortunately, the anterior cruciate ligament, if you tear it in, there's certain circumstances where you can tear it, and some people don't realize it's been torn immediately.
Uh-huh.
And they can continue just like Carson Wentz did in the game, but you could tell he wasn't right. So they ran the ball. After he got injured, he got tackled in the end zone, and I believe it was called back for some reason. They ran two plays after that, and then he threw for one, and then he came off the field, and they immediately took him to the training room and realized what was wrong. But those injuries don't always present, because I also think there's a big fact of adrenaline. When people are involved in a competitive environment at that high level,
mm-hmm.
they can mask injuries and function well. I mean, we see that. That happened in Philadelphia when I was training. We took care of Donovan McNabb, and he had an ankle injury. And at halftime, he did not want any x-rays. But then afterwards, at the end of the game, he had one of his best throwing games. He ended up getting x-rays and an MRI, and they found he broke his ankle. He played on a broken ankle.
Wow, wow.
And he was able to do so and have one of his best throwing games of his career. So adrenaline's a pretty amazing thing. And that, as a sports medicine physician, is something I have to consider when I'm treating athletes while I'm covering the specific event, in order to protect them so they don't injure themselves any further.
Mm-hmm. The anterior cruciate ligament, the ACL, it's not the only ligament in the knee that can be damaged, right?
No, there's four major ones that we refer to, but there's even several more beyond that, all of which can get injured, or all of them can get injured at one time, or combinations thereof. But that's probably the most common one that we like to talk about. The most commonly injured knee ligament would be the medial clavicular ligament, which is on the inside of your knee. I believe that Hines Ward had one of those injuries preceding one of the Super Bowls, and he recovered quite nicely in a short amount of time to get back for the game. But the anterior cruciate ligament is more of a glamorous ligament, and unfortunately it does result in surgery and a lengthy recovery process.
I've noticed just kind of accidentally almost that almost all of the pro football and many of the major college football linemen now wear these braces on both knees. Is that to increase stability and hopefully lessen the chance of injury? Because it seems to be very, very common now. In fact, it's unusual to see a lineman who's not wearing one of those things.
Well, I just had a conversation with one of my athletes who is an offensive and defensive lineman in high school, and I was speaking with the mother. I absolutely recommend that all linemen wear hinged knee braces,
mm-hmm.
because there are good studies and scientific data that those braces can prevent injury to the knee, to the collaterals. The collaterals, specifically the medial collateral and lateral collateral ligament injuries. However, that same data cannot be extrapolated to the anterior cruciate ligament. So you can wear a brace designed to protect the anterior cruciate ligament, but if you're going to get injured in it, you're going to get injured for that, and a brace won't stop an injury from occurring in that circumstance. But it will help the outer ligaments of your knee, the medial and lateral collateral. And yes, almost all NC2A athletes on the line should be wearing those braces.
You, as we mentioned earlier, do a lot of shoulder work, not exclusively, but are there age factors in determining how you would treat, for example, shoulder replacement? Is there a cutoff date whenever that's not advisable anymore?
There's not a cutoff date, but I think the important thing when determining what shoulder replacement to perform is what their expectations are.
Mm-hmm.
So I can have a 45-year-old gentleman who loves to do bench press. He wants to get back to water, snow skiing, or some sports that are risky that may cause him to fall, and we may do a smaller prosthesis that may give him good pain relief, but not absolute pain relief. Whereas if we have someone who's a little more low demand, then we can do a full formal shoulder replacement, meaning both the ball and socket are replaced, and they'll get a higher level of pain relief. But in exchange, if they were to fall under something like that, we could have a problem going forward. With someone at a high risk, we change what we do for those patients.
You mentioned earlier Dr. Joshua Zabo is with us. that you recently, earlier this month, taught shoulder and knee surgical techniques in Chicago. You were also at chairing a course on elbow and wrist injuries last month out in California. As a layperson, I'm guessing that in the winter season, you're going to see a lot of those too, elbow and wrist injury. It seems like the natural thing to do when you feel yourself falling, you know, on an icy sidewalk or icy steps, you know, you reach your arm out to try to brace your fall, and then you end up with the elbow or wrist surgery. Am I right?
That's correct, but you have to understand that's a natural reflex. We protect our brains.
Yeah.
We don't want to hit our
yeah.
heads on the cement. So I would rather someone break their wrist than have a skull fracture. So, and we can always fix the wrist or the elbow or the shoulder or whatever it may be. So we just have to be more careful when we're walking outside in snow and ice.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be outside either, by the way. Inside, tripping on a rug or going up or down stairs, right?
Yes. Any permutation imaginable, I probably have heard in my career.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you this. I'm certainly a lot slower and more cautious on ice than I used to be. You know, there was a time when I really didn't think that much about it. Nowadays, if it's too bad, I wait till it melts or, you know, you get the salt down.
I think that's prudent. But you have to understand, too, there are studies that will tell you that Tai Chi can help your balance. And as we age, our balance may not be as good as it once was. And if we can reduce that risk of us falling by improving our balance, there are certain exercises we can do that can make us safer when we're navigating those. And clearly, if we can avoid them, we should.
Mm-hmm. Tai Chi is Chinese, similar to yoga, right? Or analogous to it anyway.
Correct. It's a martial art, but it's kind of a more balanced, slow movement martial art. It's not a combative martial art necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Dr. Joshua Szabo, could you go over the locations where you practice again, Dr. Szabo, for folks who are joining us a little late here today?
Yes, I'm at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, and the specific locations where I see patients will be Butler Clearview Office, our Mars Cranberry office on Kreider Road, and then at the UPMC Lemieux Sports Complex.
And there are a couple of other Tri-Rivers clinical sites in addition, too, right?
There are, and I can't even name all of them. I'm embarrassed, but we have many other locations that other physicians will see patients.
Quite a growing practice. We all know that. Dr. Joshua Szabo, MD, practices in orthopedic sports medicine and does a lot of shoulder work, too, with the Tri-Rivers. Hey, Dr. Szabo, good to talk with you again. Hopefully not so long next time until we chat, eh?
That sounds wonderful, and I wish you a wonderful upcoming holiday season. Thank you for having me on, Dave.
Sure. Same to you, Doctor. Yeah, so long.
Have a great day.
And
bye-bye.
You. Dr. Joshua Szabo is a nice guy. Sense of humor, too, huh? Yeah, yeah. And that, I think that's important in a physician. That's the kind of guy you say, okay, I got a shoulder problem. I can talk to him. Okay, we need to take a break here. We have more to come on It's Your Turn. We have, over the past, I guess, couple of weeks now, tried to hunt down a couple of ideas for last-minute stocking stuffers for you. And we have a pretty good one coming up, I think. Opportunity to chat with Pamela McCall about a book. I guess it's a classic Christmas book for young people, although I must confess that I was not familiar with it until I talked with Pamela's folks. The book has been reissued. It's called The Boy Who Lived in Pudding Lane, a classic children's book. And we'll find out why Pamela decided to reissue this and how she tweaked it a little bit when we return on It's Your Turn here on WISR in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today here on It's Your Turn, our good friends at Goan Postal Butler. And boy, this is the time of the year. You know, have you got Christmas packages to mail out? Got to get on the stick here because we've got a couple of weeks. But they can do it for you very quickly and very conveniently. And, you know, it's really a bag to try to do this yourself, whether you have one package or 10. Goan Postal Butler, very simply, wraps your packages for shipping. Yeah, and you can ship it any way you want, a variety of different ways. UPS, FedEx, United States Postal Service, they'll handle it for you. They're located at 140 Shockey Lane. It's just off Newcastle Road near the Butler High entrance. It's right behind Villa Grande, the Villa Grande restaurant. Yeah, right behind them. You can call them. We'll give you a phone number in a second here. find out about all of their various services in addition to shipping your packages, preparing and shipping your packages. They have copying, scanning, and faxing services available, and a bunch of other stuff too. In fact, you can even grab a greeting card while you're up there if you need one of those at the last minute. Here's the phone number, 724-841-0044. Going postal, Butler. Another one of our sponsors is Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, home to the tastiest turkeys in western Pennsylvania. And this holiday season, Dave Jones is offering a special as a thank you to his loyal customers throughout the years. From now through December 19th, the Jones Turkey Farm is lowering the price of a frozen turkey from $3.25 a pound to just $2.50. That's right. Best turkeys in western Pennsylvania can be yours for just $2.50 a pound. Visit their website. All the details are there. You can learn more. JonesTurkeyFarm.com. Make your holiday season merry by getting a Jones turkey for the whole family to enjoy. You never get it fresher. They're local. Jones Road in Cabot. Website again, JonesTurkeyFarm.com. JonesTurkeyFarm.com. Going to talk a little bit about, this is a story, folks, that is unfamiliar to me. A story about Santa Claus and some of the history of Santa Claus as created by Sarah Addington back in the 1920s. Our guest to talk about this is Pamela McCall of Grafton and Scratch Publishers. First of all, Pamela, hello. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
So what's your connection to my rather lengthy preface there? You have republished, as I understand it, a story that was originally written by Sarah Addington?
Yes, in 1921 it first appeared at Christmas time in Liddy's Home Journal, and sadly it sort of fell out of print, and it's a real little gem of Americana. I discovered it last year as I went looking for the backstory, the origin story of Santa Claus as a young boy, and I found that many writers had taken it upon themselves to create this story around Santa, but no one did it as well as Sarah Addington, so I decided to publish her story about Santa Claus growing up in Pudding Lane.
Now, your title is The Boy Who Lived in Pudding Lane. Was that, in fact, the title that she used, or is that your creation?
No, that's Sarah Addington's title. I wanted to stay very close to this book and do an honorary sort of edition for her. I didn't want to change it. I didn't want to rewrite it. I wanted to respect her writing and bring it out as a classic and the illustrations as well. We didn't enhance them. We just went back and thought what they might have looked like in 1920, almost 100 years ago, and we fixed them up so that they would appear as they would have in Liddy's Home Journal.
Is there any history about Sarah Addington in terms of how or why she decided to use her imagination and create this backstory of Santa as a boy? Do we know why she did it?
Well, she was a journalist, and she also was in the suffragette movement in New York. She was one of the press people when women got the vote in New York. And I think that this was her lighter side, but the story, you know, is very well written, and the characters are well developed. So she puts in some little quibbles and different characteristics around people, and makes it an interesting read, not only for a child but for an adult. I'm 60, and I thoroughly enjoyed reading this book, and I took some of her little jabs and little comments about human foibles, and thought it was just, you know, a delightful read.
So this story was originally published in a magazine, which, by the way, back in those days, many books originated in magazines as serials. That even goes back to the days of Charles Dickens. There was a book a year later, but it disappeared. And you said you discovered it just last year, Pamela?
I did. I went looking for it, and I found it, and I got three original copies, and we used those copies to create this new edition, and it's in the public domain. Because it's prior to 1923, and also the author has been dead 70-plus years, and so it qualifies public domain. And Sarah Addington did die when she was 50, and I think that's part of the reason that the book maybe wasn't reprinted. There was no, you know, author to go with it, so I think that's one of the reasons. But I've certainly heard from lots of librarians and different people who have either an original copy or have had a copy of the Liddy's Home Journal, and they've been reading it through the years. And I'm very pleased to see it in libraries. I've been getting notifications when libraries purchase it, and so that's really delightful to see, so that so many people can enjoy it.
It was just re-released by your company, Grafton and Scratch Publishers, this fall. Is it available in bookstores and so on, or where do people find it?
Sure it is, and it's at Amazon as well, and they've got a promotion on right now, and then it's available in independent bookstores, anywhere else you'd like to order it. It's through we print out of Ohio, Ashland, Ohio, with Bookmasters, and you can purchase it through them as well. And we love hearing from people and what they think about this book. And we're on Facebook with the title of the book, The Boy Who Lived in Pudding Lane. And as I said, love to hear from people and hear what they think about this classic.
So what will people learn? I mean, you know, most people know at least something about Santa Claus, probably much of it based on Clement C. Moore's poem. What do we learn in The Boy who Lived in Pudding Lane that we never knew before? One thing is we find out Mrs. Claus's name.
Yes, and we also find out that Santa Claus's grandmother was Mother Goose, which is fun, that he grew up in a family that didn't have very much money. His father was a baker. That's why Santa Claus has a bit of a girth. Even when he was little, he loved sweets and would go to the shop and eat all the little treats. And then we have just a fun village of characters and lots of them from nursery rhyme context and just a really lovely little story that I think really enchants. And it's just such a addition to a family Christmas reading.
According to Sarah Addington's story, when did Santa begin passing out toys at Christmas time?
Well, he had two sets of siblings, two sets of twins as his brothers and sisters, and so he wanted to make them toys, and so that's what he does. He makes toys for his own siblings, and then he sets out to become a toy maker who can give away gifts. He doesn't want to be a toy maker that sells them. He wants to know how he can give them away, which causes the family a bit of a consternation as to how do they make that happen. And Mother Goose and King Cole and all kinds of other people come to devise a plan that can see Santa Claus become the gift giver that we all know.
There's a little bit of an analogy to Christopher Columbus here, as I read about Sarah Addington's story. I'd never seen it before I found out about your re-release. You know, when you think about it, to start funding this whole operation of going out on Christmas Eve and delivering toys all over the world, you need a little seed money. And just like Christopher Columbus went to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella to finance his trip to the New World, Santa went to King Cole.
Yes, yes. And the story really is about a child's passion, a child's desire to do something with his life, and a family rallying around it and the community to make that dream come true. So, you know, it translates to, you know, our own lives and raising children who express desires to do things and how we can all help them, you know, find a happy life and fulfill their own dreams. And so it's got that in it. And it's just this lovely story about, you know, a family pulling together over adversity and just generosity of the season. You know, Santa wants to give presents to everyone, and that he, you know, is able to do that and fly around the world on Christmas Eve. You know, it's just such a lovely story.
Is this a book, are there pictures, illustrations? Is it something that parents can read, you know, with the young kids sitting beside them on the couch?
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's lovely little pen and ink drawings, plus there's a stunning illustration by Gertrude Kay, right out of the Art Nouveau American School of Illustration. So the 1920s was a very rich period of illustration, and Gertrude Kay was right in the center of that, very famous for her Alice in Wonderland, but also for this book. The illustrations are stunning. I think probably my favorite is the last picture of Mrs. Claus waving off Santa on his first night around the world on his sleigh. And it's just a truly beautiful painting. And the end papers as well, when you open the book, the inside cover of full spread of Santa with a sleigh is also, you know, just a beautiful rendition, a beautiful, beautiful painting.
And you restored and enlivened these illustrations a bit?
We hired a very well-known book designer, and we said, make this look like it would have looked in 1920. We didn't want to I didn't feel that we should do anything to Gertrude Case's work. I thought we should present it as she would have liked to see it. And so we did not enliven it sort of for modern day, you know, look. We went back and made it very historical and very accurate. And I just felt I wanted to respect both Sarah Addington and Gertrude Case in that way. And I think that it resonates. It has a feel of an old book. Even the pages, we've colored them a tiny bit so that they look like they're older. Mm. So I think the book has a feel of being old. And I wanted to achieve that. And I think we did. I'm pretty happy with it.
This is not the first time you've tweaked a holiday classic, Pamela McCall. Several years ago, you published a unique version of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas with a few edits. Most notably, you removed the references to Santa Claus smoking a pipe, and it took off like crazy. You got nationwide publicity for doing that.
It got international. It went around the world. That was a very big story, and I still work on that campaign, 'Twas for Kids, on Twitter. I'm very, very much a child's activist, and I work on child human rights, and children have a right to a smoke-free Santa. And, you know, what I did in 2012 with 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, edited by Santa Claus, was to take out the smoking pipe, and I did it because children prefer a smoke-free Santa. We talked to 1,000 children. Virtually all of them wanted to see Santa Claus without a pipe. You know, these are children who, when they see Santa, like little kids, 5, 6, 7-year-olds who see Santa smoking, it bothers them. You know, they don't want to worry about their parents smoking and dying, and they sure don't want to worry about Santa's health. So I did it for them. And as you said, I got a lot of slack. I think Stephen Colbert called me a Nazi, and of course, in jest, as a spoof. But, you know, I was hit over the head at a New York library by somebody who called me a heretic. So, you know, it certainly was a feisty conversation, but I stand by it. You know, I believe that 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, you know, needs to be available in a smoke-free edition because it is the most famous poem in the English language. Santa Claus is the most influential character of all time, and the most loved character. So, you know, I did it for children. And this new book, you know, I stayed completely to the text and the illustrations because, again, it's respect for the writer. And I think that Clement C. Moore, who wrote 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, who never intended on Santa Claus to look like a father figure smoking a pipe in the middle of anyone's living room, he was meant to look like an elf or a leprechaun. And it's one thing for a leprechaun to be smoking. It's quite another for a human being. And I know Clement C. Moore thought that smoking was opium's treacherous villainous friend. So I don't think Clement C. Moore would have any problems with what I did. And I sure hope Sarah Addington, you know, her ancestors really enjoy what I've done to her book as well.
I agree with you. Clement C. Moore wrote, it was in the 1820s that he wrote.
1822.
Yeah.
1822.
Actually, the original title of the poem was A Visit from St. Nicholas. We know it today as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. But you're right. A lot of the image that most people, that pops into most people's minds today about Santa Claus comes from much later. Actually, much of it from a Coca-Cola advertising campaign back in, the 1930s or 1940s or something like that.
Yes, and so we morphed him into a human thanks to Coca-Cola. And, you know, I think that when you look at editions now, I mean, there's some editions of this book, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, the most famous poem in English language. You know, it's really important to mention. You know, where smoking is still glorified, there's smoking on the cover. There's smoking all over the page. Like, the pages just are taken over by this wreath of smoke around Santa's head. You know, it's so passé. I mean, 1998, the American government made it illegal to advertise tobacco through cartoon characters, meaning Joe Camel, Santa Claus, Mickey Mouse, everybody, right, in advertising. But that has to translate into cultural images as well, and that's why I work on the smoke-free movies campaign. We've got to clean up our culture so kids aren't sympathized towards towards marijuana or tobacco products smoked.
You mentioned Sarah Addington's living in a remarkable time. Our time is just about gone here today, but let me ask you a little bit about her. She was would it be correct to categorize her as an early feminist? It probably wasn't a word that was used back in the 1920s.
She was right in the thick of it. She was the assistant publicity manager for the New York Suffragette Association in New York. She was there when women got the vote, so she was very much an activist. And kudos to her for it. And she was also the first woman to graduate from the Columbia School of Journalism, and she was in their first graduating class. So she was a trailblazer for sure. And I think she wrote this book because she was a serious journalist, and here was a chance to have some fun and to maybe explore human character in a fictional way that she wanted to do. So she's an important writer. I mean, I think that this isn't the only book she wrote. She wrote about 12 of them, and I'm just so glad that, you know, maybe she'll have a bit of a revival.
It sounds like if she were still alive today, she would be very much in the forefront of this new movement to unmask and unveil inappropriate sexual activity by so many men.
I'm sure she would be. She'd probably be shocked, just like Tina Brown, on and after all of these decades, that we haven't made more progress.
Yes. Well, nice to talk with you. Our time is limited here. Again, the title of the newly released book, The Boy Who Lived in Pudding Lane. And I feel almost deprived, Pamela, that I never heard of this book. And I never heard of Sarah Addington until I got in touch with your publisher to schedule this interview. You've enlightened me, and
well,
I suspect many others, and I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Sure. So long now.
Okay, bye-bye.
One of our sponsors on the program is Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop, Main Street, downtown Butler, their original location. They have three locations now. There's a Cummings at Butler Memorial Hospital and the newest Cummings, Cummings West on Route 68, just on the outskirts of the city. Boy, we're getting close to Christmas here. Don't forget Cummings. For Christmas gift ideas, you could choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips or pretzels or graham crackers or cherry cordials. Delicious. Nice little box of them. They'll fix them up for you. Mm-hmm. And call Barry for information on corporate orders. 287-3287. Cummings, under the red and white awning. Oh, you could add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. It's roasted right there. Hmm. Open 7 days a week. Peanut brittle available now, too. Oh, is that ever delicious. Cummings, candy and coffee. Main Street, North Main Street, downtown, Butler Memorial Hospital, and Cummings West on Route 68.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 6262. The pick 3, 101. Pick 4, 0169. The pick 5, 92918. The wild ball for each of those is 4. The treasure hunt, 3, 11, 20, 21, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
On the next segment, listeners, of It's Your Turn, we're going to be talking about not just flu shot, but the importance in particular of seniors getting flu shots. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guests are two. They visit with us by telephone today. Dr. Adam Welch is associate professor at the Bill Gatton College of Pharmacy at East Tennessee State. And also with us is Gina Venditti, who is on the board of trustees of the Physician Assistant Foundation. Gina, let me start with you. Why is it particularly important for older adults, for seniors, to be protected from the flu? We hear this, but why is it?
Absolutely. That's a great question to start with. So as we age, our immune system does decrease in its strength. So the ability to prevent getting an infection or the ability to ward off the infection. So in a patient 65 and older, they're at a higher risk of getting the infection, having more symptoms with it, and that infection lasting longer. But also, we know that patients over 65 have other chronic conditions or comorbidities going on. They may have diabetes, they may have heart disease, which can be affected or made worsened by having the influenza virus.
Hmm. And the significant factor here is pretty large. I mean, there's a much greater risk. It's not just a greater risk. It's a much greater risk for seniors to even die from the flu, is it not?
You're exactly right. Actually, it's one of the most staggering statistics that 90% of all flu-related deaths every year are in patients 65 and older.
Hmm. So let me go to Dr. Welch. Do you need to get a flu shot every season? People say, well, I got it a couple of years ago, or I got one last year. Do you need to get one every year, doctor?
Yes, it's important to get a flu shot every season. The CDC recommends that all people 6 months of age and older receive a flu shot every season. And the reason why every season is because the virus mutates. It evolves. It changes slightly from year to year. So you need to keep being vaccinated each year in order to stay protected from that evolving and mutating virus.
Here we are, holiday season. Maybe some folks are thinking, oh, gosh. You know, it's almost the new year. It's too late. Can you still get a flu shot and still have it be effective for this season, doctor?
Yes, yes, absolutely. You can still get a flu vaccine. We are seeing that the flu influenza virus is circulating a bit earlier this year than it typically does. However, no one can predict when influenza will be circulating in your local neighborhoods and your local environment. So getting a flu vaccine, it's not too late. Even after the new year, it's not too late to get protected. It does take about 2 weeks for your body to build a response, to build up that immunity to the influenza. So getting it now, if you haven't already, is a great thing to do for the holiday season.
You mentioned, Dr. Welch, that they reformulate or at least tweak the vaccine every year, depending on what they think the dominant strain is going to be. I understand, and to me, this is something new. There are now vaccines that are specifically designed for seniors. Am I correct on that?
You are correct, and a lot of people don't realize there are a dozen different flu vaccines available on the market, and a couple of them are specifically formulated for people 65 years of age and older. One of them contains what we call an adjuvant, which is an extra ingredient that helps boost the immune system to help overcome that weakening immune system that Gina had mentioned. Another one contains a higher amount of the active ingredient. Both of these are great options for seniors 65 and older to help prevent flu and the complications that come from flu.
You know what a lot of people think, doctor? Well, if one pill is good, two or three might be better. You shouldn't get two or three flu shots, should you?
No, you shouldn't. One flu vaccine is typically enough for the flu season. You know, there are very rare cases when we have an epidemic. You know, the last that occurred was in 2009 with the swine flu, where that H1N1 that was circulating wasn't in the traditional flu vaccine, so they had to create a whole new separate flu vaccine. But for most seasons, one dose is what you need to be protected for the entire flu season, and everyone should be getting that.
Let me go back to Gina here for a question that really applies a lot to physician assistants. What else can we do? So we get a flu shot. Are there other things we can do to help protect us from getting the flu, Gina?
Absolutely. So, and we know the flu is out there, and typically the flu is transmitted in what we call droplets. So it's a virus, and it's hanging out, and somebody coughs or sneezes, and that's how it can be spread to somebody else. So certainly some of the most common sense things are washing your hands and avoiding touching your mouth, your nose, and your eyes. And if somebody is sick around you, you know, and you see them cough or sneeze, certainly you would want to go wash your hands right after that.
Of course, that can be a problem for a lot of people, seniors included, during the winter season, because the furnace is on all the time and your skin tends to dry out, and here you are washing your hands all the time, right?
Okay. And we mentioned that washing the hands, of course, and this time of year, if people are using the furnace at home and the weather's drier, you can definitely get some cracking in the hands. But it's really important then to use moisturizer, because even if there's any cracking or chafing in your hands and in your skin, that could even lead to a place where you could get infection.
We need to develop the habit, too, of not, I mean, it is such a natural reaction to, for me anyway, Gina, to, touch your face, touch your nose, touch your mouth, and that just really can't. I've done it sometimes without even thinking about it, just after I washed my hands, and I'm thinking, you know, you idiot, what are you doing here? You just have to be constantly aware, don't you?
You do. And, you know, most studies show that people will touch parts of their face up to 25 times or more during the day. So you're exactly right. It's usually something that's habitual. You don't even realize you're doing it. So that's actually another great thing to try to change that behavior. If you find yourself touching that, you know, your certain parts of your face, because that's really where the virus, it would be on your hands, mm-hmm. and then you touch your eyes or your nose, and now you've gotten the virus inside of you.
Mm. Dr. Welch, where can we get flu shots? Actually, it's a lot more places now than it used to be, right?
There are plenty of places to get the flu vaccine. 50% of adults are going to their doctor's office to get the flu vaccine. About 25% are going to a pharmacy. About 20% are getting it in their workplace. So there are plenty of options. Talk to your healthcare provider. Talk to your physician assistant. Talk to your pharmacist. Alternatively, you can go to vaccinefinder.org and get more information about influenza vaccines.
One final question. Some people still maintain that you can catch the flu by getting a flu shot. Not true, right?
That's correct. It's not true. It only contains bits of protein that your body recognizes as influenza, but it does not contain the virus, so it cannot give you influenza. I think one of the situations is people mistake a common cold for influenza. It's that fever and that muscle ache and